Kaya Talk on Kaya 959.
On the street, on the air.
So we are looking now, this is the Editor's Forum, we're looking at the week that was. Bernadette Vix is a senior reporter at The Citizen on the line with us, specializing in legal and court news. Bernadette, what a week it's been. Good evening. Hi.
Absolutely. Hi, Tamela. Thanks for having me.
So one would have imagined that there would have been a bit of a lull, you know, after the past week that we saw in the country. Not a chance. What stood out for you, Bernadette?
Well, I think that obviously the Zuma saga continues, and we had the former president in court, obviously, at the beginning of the week for what was supposed to be the resumption of his trial and what was supposed to be the special plea that he wanted to argue. That didn't go ahead. It was postponed again. And then, of course, KZN has just been there's been a lot going on in KZN still over the course of the last week. It certainly has calmed down there now, but I think the province now is really dealing with the mop-up and the aftermath of what happened and sort of ensuring that, putting measures in place to ensure that there aren't more flare-ups and that they can stem the tide.
Just as a citizen, Bernadette, how did you find the contestation of the framing of what happened by government by government ministers, the disagreements? How did you find that?
Well, I definitely thought that it was problematic at a time when really what we needed was clear direction and sort of clear authority on where we stood on what had happened, because for a lot of people there was a lot of confusion. You know, unrest in of itself is not something that's uncommon in South Africa. It is something that we're quite used to. But certainly in terms of what we saw play out in KZN and in Gauteng, that was far beyond the level of anything we've ever seen before. And I think that when the former, or when at least President Cyril Ramaphosa came out and said, you know, essentially that it is a failed insurrection, that it was a failed insurrection, that I think people really appreciated. I know for myself that I really appreciated the fact that it felt like someone was saying it like it was. And then I think that the subsequent confusion around that and the subsequent sort of contestation that's happened since then, it kind of left something of a bitter taste in my mouth personally, because like I say, I was quite happy with the idea that we had Ramaphosa coming out quite strongly and quite firmly at that stage.
Sheldon Morris is an assistant editor of Breaking News at News 24, also on the line with us. Sheldon, good evening and thanks for coming onto the show.
Thank you very much, Pamela.
Sheldon, so what was it that stood out for you this week that, especially for your audience, that your audience were drawn to?
Pamela, I think, you know, all of South Africa was watching the development, you know, as discussed around how was the unrest ending. I think today was possibly the first day since it started that there were no incidents reported by the government. You know, yesterday we still had sporadic incidents in and around Hammersdale. It had ended, you know, in Gauteng several days ago already. And I think the focus now is you know, to figuring out what happened. You know, ever since the unrest broke out, there was, you know, a confluence of what it was about. Was it supporters of former President Jacob Zuma? Was it pure criminality? Was it a mixture of those? And I think that people struggled to paint it, or at least grasp a nuanced picture of what exactly was happening. You know, was it because of our dire inequality levels, you know, and the dire youth unemployment, poverty that we saw the looting happening? Was it purely a survive, you know, driven by survivalist instincts? So I think that has still been the focus this week. You know, what's happened? We're all still catching our breath, I think, as a nation. And then the real tragedy, you know, the real tragedy of this are the lives lost. Mm. You know, that's now starting to come to the fore. We're starting to get a better idea of how many people just lost their lives. Government in their daily briefing today saying that number has been revised upwards to 337 people who died, many of those murdered, There are a couple of inquest dockets because I think that speaks to some of the people who died during the looting. So, for instance, had items fall on them and the like. But the bulk of those people were murdered, you know, died. They died by the hands of someone else. And that's now coming to the fore. And I think, you know, we haven't seen a scale like that. And that, you know, people dying from one related incident in you know, post-democratic South Africa.
Then, Sheldon, what informs your editorial decision in how to frame it if, as we can see, now government in itself does not agree on how to frame it? So what informs your decision in how to frame that narrative?
That's a very interesting question. You know, initially, the seeds of it seem to be around protests, you know, calling for President Jacob Zuma to be freed. He had just been, ferried to escort correctional facility late that Wednesday night. Those were the initial seeds, and it seemed to be confined to KwaZulu-Natal. Then it spread to Gauteng. Then, you know, there was looting by people who of their own accord said, you know, I couldn't care less whether Jacob Zuma was in prison or not. I'm not doing this about him. I admit that I'm, you know, committing a crime, but I am doing it to survive. You know, it's for the, you know, we've been looked down on, we've been neglected by government, by society, by business, you know, and this is now the opportunity we're taking. So as it developed, you know, we dropped the word Zuma from things like headlines and in short descriptors and characterized it as unrest. However, that nuance around how it started was so key, because I think that helped people so that when government did say insurrection in the form of the president's words first, and then, you know, said it wasn't insurrection in the initial words of the defense minister, people were able to frame how the violence exploded, and saying to people as well, and explaining in our editorial in various instances, you know, depending on what the story was that we were covering, that, you know, bringing to the fore that South Africa is an unequal society. You know, the inequality levels are some of the highest in the world, that there is poverty, that did play into some of the scenes we saw as the unrest developed. You know, some of the people who we couldn't ignore that, and you can't paint it as, you know, just the Jacob Zuma picture, or just the inequality picture, the looting picture. And then there was obviously the racial tensions, you know, that sparked up, especially in Phoenix. And then telling that story and being able to frame it, because, you know, you had people who on both sides were saying, you know, it was no longer about the former president, but it was now about these two sets of communities, these two sets of racial groups, and how they were clashing and the real consequences of that. You know, people being murdered. We heard of people being hacked to death, and that has really been horrific, and I think has left a mark on many a conscience.
Reggie Mwalusi is an executive director at South African National Editors Forum, also on the line with us. And Reggie, let me thank you first of all for being with us and ask you about the frustrations that I've seen on the faces of journalists as they simply ask the question, so what is this and what happened? And I'm now specifically thinking of Minister of Police, Bekicele, who got a bit hostile, it could have been today or yesterday, I'm not sure, when he was asked, so did you get the report? And suddenly the enemy was a journalist just asking the question. Because there are these tensions between ministries, how are journalists managing what to make of that and how to report it? Reggie?
It's been quite confusing. It's been quite perplexing, Pamela. We saw it earlier this week. Was it an insurrection? Mm-hmm. Was it not an insurrection? With the Minister of Defense and the President contradicting each other. But, out of all of this, we have seen in the past 2 weeks how our ministers have come short and the criticism leveled at them, and how we, especially as the South African National Editors Forum, we even had to reach out to the GCIS to say the daily briefings by acting minister Shabele, to take questions, because there were more questions than answers, and we had to get that for sure. Now, we do work well as SADF with the GCIS, but I mean the ministers and the handling of of journalists and how they speak to journalists, especially in cases of where they are under pressure and questions are coming, you know, fastly and furiously, and they are really found wanting, and you do ask yourself to say, you know, who's not talking to who? Who's not, if our minister tells us, you know, it was not our fault, the Ministry of Intelligence led by Minister Giorgio didn't quite brief us, and then there's that counter-blaming. You really get to see that, you know, we've got a whole lot of ministers, and the criticism that how they handled the whole thing and how they underestimated the unrest itself, of what it would be, they truly underestimated it, and the level of what we had to deal with. And it's only now when they realize that the whole world was watching us. It's only now they realize of how many lives have been lost, as Sheldon says. It's only now they realize that, you know, when intelligence works and they are briefed about such, they really have to take heed of these and attend to them quite immediately.
Bernadette, in terms of a few things, resources and just pure fatigue by journalists, have we done enough in following the nuance of the story? In other words, instead of just giving the grim picture of the numbers of the dead and so on, and those images, in really trying to unpack for ourselves what really happened. So what I'm seeing right now, we're reporting a lot on what government is telling us. So we ask the question and then we report on what they're telling us. But have journalists done enough in unpacking this for themselves by following the story to the homes of the people either who died or those who may be suspected as instigators? Bernadette?
Well, I definitely think that, you know, these are still very early days, and I think that there's certainly more to come. Do I think at this stage that it's all been unpacked? Absolutely not. No, I think that we have weeks, that the stories that are coming out from this are going to have legs for weeks and for months still to come. And I think that it's going to require some real investigation, and I think that's where our investigative journalists are really going to come in, because we do understand that what happened was not in any way coincidental, but it's very clear to everyone that it was organized and it was orchestrated. And with that, armed with that knowledge, it means that we need to look further, we need to look deeper. And I think the media has an incredibly important role to play. And I think what was said earlier about the way the minister in the presidency has been handling, or at least the acting minister in the presidency has been handling some of these press briefings, is so true. The media has played such an important role over the past 2 weeks in informing the public of what was going on. A lot of journalists have genuinely put their own well-being on the line. And now we're at the stage where, like you say, we need to start really understanding what happened, because that's the only way that we can move forward from it. That's the only way that we can progress. And the media needs to be given that access, needs to be given the information that it requires to be able to unpack that further. Like I say, I think there's still a lot to come, though.
Sure. Sheldon, do we run the risk of pouring all our resources in the one story? Because there are other stories, and I'm finding that we all have just maybe fixated our eyes on this one story. It's a big story, sure, but are we running that risk, Sheldon?
I don't think we'll run that risk. I think, as Bernadette has rightfully pointed out, I think we're slowly unpacking various elements. I mean, some of it won't necessarily come out, you know, on public platforms and ministers openly, you know, talking about how the events played out. So I think there's a lot of investigating that's still going to come out of this. I think, you know, speaking to the various players within the in the political space, I think more is going to develop there. And also just the human stories, you know, the impact, the people who've lost loved ones, the people who've lost their livelihoods. I think those stories are going to come, are still to come to the fore. I think the news agenda will naturally take its course, and I don't think you can spend too many resources on this story, but I think and you're already seeing it in what people are talking about and what people are reading about as well. You see the news agenda already developing and becoming, I suppose, more varied than it had been perhaps last week. So I don't think there's any risk of it, but I do think that this story will remain one of the top three, top five that, you know, people will talk about, will read, and have resources invested in it.
Reggie, I know that this is not the kind of thing we speak in public about, but how are journalists managing? We've seen there's a slight spike now in COVID infections, and that I'm sure is very related to what we saw in the past week. You know, people were out in their numbers and so on, but journalists were also in the mix. So apart from the fact that they were out there 24/7 for many days, how are journalists coping? Their health, their well-being?
Sure, Pamela. It's been quite a busy past 3 weeks for us. I mean, first of all, we did a very successful webinar with FADEC, just looking at the mental health of journalists and what help they can get and who they can call and all that. And then over and above that, we started a conversation with government as far back as May, I think, to really get journalists vaccinated. Because we have seen that, you know, more especially our field reporters who go out, they get infected. We have seen journalists interviewing people who refuse to wear masks, to social distance. I mean, we are counting to this day. Just today, we had a memorial service for Sichaba Kankosi. We lost another journalist who used to work for Soweten, but that was due to diabetes, called St. P. Molakeng. In Cape Town, we lost a young journalist called Siyabonga Africa. So if you look at it, COVID has taken journalists. Hence, we've been hard at work with GCIS and the Department of Health to really get our journalists vaccinated, more especially those journalists below the ages of 35. We are making some good progress there, and we're really hoping that we can get them vaccinated. I mean, it's been tough. We have seen outside Nkandla leading up to the arrest of the former president, journalists being threatened. We have seen when the riots broke out in Joburg, where a News 24 journalist was threatened to someone telling him they kill him. We have seen Newsroom Africa's cars being damaged, SABC staff in Alex being robbed. So all these things, this is what journalists who go out on the field, they have to deal with. So people like Sheldon being, you know, the lead in the newsroom, sending out their reporters, this is what they stress about, and this is what we as an office are there to support them with. So we are leading the conversation with government. Our biggest priority now, what's keeping us awake at night, is to really get our journalists vaccinated.
Bernadette, just to that point, I know that there were tensions around how much of the journalist story do we highlight, you know, the threats to their lives, the looting of their own property and so on. The conversation in your newsroom, the decision about how much to expose your journalists were experiencing, what was that like?
Well, in the industry, there's always sort of an idea of guarding against becoming the news yourself.
Yeah.
But over the last 2 weeks, and it does happen quite regularly with unrest, but over the last 2 weeks especially, you know, a lot of our colleagues have been targeted, and it has definitely escalated to a different level. And we do think it's important to tell these stories, and that it's important that the public and that the country knows these things are happening, because the value of a free press just can't be can't be overstated, you know. And when that's under threat, it's important that the public understands that and that other people in other industries understand that so that they can rally behind it, because it's our democracy is so dependent on a free press. It really does impact everyone. And when journalists are threatened to the extent that they have been threatened, and when they are in dangerous situations to the extent that they've been in dangerous situations over the last couple of weeks, that is a threat on media freedom. That is a threat on press freedom. And it's an important, it's important to tell people about that and to tell that story.
Sheldon, it was journalists who discovered bodies in rivers, bodies piled up in malls after days. How is the mental health of journalists in your newsroom?
Yeah, that's a, you know, it's a very important question, and one that, you know, we continue to deal with. I mean, SANIT has done some amazing work working with the likes of SADC, internally as well at News 24, at least that I can speak for. We've got, you know, we've got systems and an external company that's versed in this, you know. There's only so much an editor can talk through to, or a colleague can help you with, and you need professional assistance. And Pamela, it really has affected them. I mean, you know, I think we've got a generation of journalists who are more aware to their mental health well-being. So being, you know, I had one reporter actively seeking out some time off in conjunction with, you know, saying, look, I'm going to go for debriefing and say I need time off to, you know, to make sense of all of this, to recuperate, to you know, debrief and also just to rest. And I think that was, you know, that's so fabulously insightful in terms of one's psyche, what one needs as well. You know, and so a lot of the reporters, those who have been out, especially, you know, if they've been the ones to find the dead bodies, you know, we encourage and send them for debriefing almost immediately, and then continue to have those conversations to say it's a safe space. If you're not up to covering a story, that's okay. You know, or if you need some time off after covering a story.
Yeah.
But it really has been harrowing. And one reporter, you know, our reporters in KZN, you know, usually, Pamela, you know, when you're covering a story, you get the luxury of being able to go home. And you know, there's that separation of I've been to the story and now in a safe space. For our colleagues working, and I mean this across the media, for the colleagues working in KZN, they faced a unique situation. Once they left the scene of the story, their homes were often
in the story. Yeah.
So they heard gunshots at night while they were trying to sleep. You know, so it was really, I think it's so important to you know put that element front and center. You know, not just, you know, now and then forget about it in the next 2 weeks. But it really is, I think, quite unique in terms of the story, both from a national perspective, but also from a coverage perspective and what journalists have to deal with.
So Reggie, I mean, I imagine Sheldon says, you know, sometimes the journalists would say, I've had enough, I need to go and debrief. And that's fantastic in theory. When you're already thin on the ground, I'm imagining that a lot of newsrooms are struggling. You know, people are getting sick. They're exhausted. You don't have enough journalists to go around. And then I come and say, well, I need time off. How are editors managing, Reggie?
They're not managing. I mean, as it is, we all know that newsrooms are operating with scant resources. And those scant resources are really thin on the ground. And I mean, on a much more serious and painful note, you know, we have seen in the past year, I mean, journalists have lost jobs.
Yeah,
we have seen. Titles closing.
Yeah.
We have seen media houses saying we can't cope anymore, we can't pay your salaries. Hence, we were so angry with last week's events where we saw about four community radio stations
shut down.
Getting banned and damaged and whatever not.
Yeah.
Hence, we're working so hard to try and get them back on air, some are back on air. But I mean, you can imagine being an editor and a news editor. Now we are in an age where journalists have to go and debrief, mm-hmm. and you are left with one person
mm-hmm.
now.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the times we live in. They're not the times when someone like me started out as a journalist some 18 years ago.
Well, you had no rights.
And I had no rights. And I had no place to question my salary or to debrief and talk about the lunch hour or whatever. So these are the times we live in. And these times, unfortunately or fortunately, we have to listen to the young journalists, and we really have to take heed of their concerns and what they are raising in the newsroom to say, you know what? And I mean, you have seen it, Pimelo. You have seen it also on a platform like Twitter, how our female journalists get bullied,
mm-hmm.
how they get treated and mm-hmm. all that, and how they get called names and
yep.
they get threatened, which we have always condemned. And you can imagine being a female journalist in South Africa and having to deal with that.
Yeah.
And now you need to go and you are trying to feel bad that you need to be at work, but on the same length, you are also thinking, I'm not okay. Should I go to work if I'm not okay?
Mm-hmm.
And your editor now has to say, please do take some time off. We'll be okay. We'll see you when you're back. So resources are scant. But these are the tough times we're living in, and we are trying to really adjust and support one another as media houses.
Gentlemen and a lady, thank you very much. Bernadette Vicks is a senior reporter at The Citizen. Sheldon Morris is an assistant editor breaking news at News 24. Reggie Mualusi is executive director at SANEF.
Kaya Talk on Kaya 959.
On the street, on the air.